There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Up on NFL Live, Doug Peterson says the Eagles will beat the Cowboys and in the process become the first place team in the NFC East to bold after a loss. And speaking of bold, it is overreaction Monday and plenty to overreact about. We'll take you through rapid fire, some of the most burning quarterback questions around the league. Plus, we look back at some of the best plays from week six. We see which team was in sync on Sunday. Our Sunday standouts do not disappoint. You like what I did there? Hello, everybody. Happy to have you with us. Oh, there you are. I'm Wendy Nix, along with Chris Mortensen, Ryan Clark, and Tim Hasselbeck. I say it every week. It's a crazy Monday. I swear it's true every week. But raise your hand if you saw this one coming and then promptly put your hand down because no one did. Much to the Cowboys' chagrin, Jets quarterback Sam Darnold back on the field Sunday after a bout with mono. Mort says, yes, he did. Unfazed by the layoff, Darnold played one of the best games of his young career, and the Jets beat the Cowboys, who, by the way, after starting the season 3-0, the loss now drops the Cowboys to 3-3.
We just got to go out there and play better football. We're not playing very good football right now, so, I mean, I guess every week, it's got to get back to work tomorrow, get in the film room, you know, see what went wrong, see what went well, and learn on it and, you know, get better.
What does it do to the confidence of this football
team? Don't change. Not at all. You know what the hell happened today. We beat ourselves just like last week. Now it's time to buckle down and, you know, get things going.
All right, let's overreact, shall we? It is, in fact, Overreaction Monday, and we'll start with this. The Cowboys will miss the playoffs. Ryan, overreaction or no?
I believe this is an overreaction, and you do have some concern that they found three different ways to lose three games in a row. But you look at this division, they have an opportunity to, against the Eagles this week, to be atop the division with a win. And so when you have that type of opportunity, when you have that type of game on your home field, you have to go out and show that you are that team that we saw the first 3 weeks of the season. You're definitely starting to feel a little pressure if you're the Dallas Cowboys. But to say that just because we've seen these last 3 weeks that they won't make it to the playoffs, I think it's a little bit early to make that claim.
Mort, agree or disagree?
I say it's an overreaction. I agree with Ryan, in other words. Number one is, like, I did not predict this game.
Okay,
but
I did have some
good pro people tell me, look, if Lyle Collins is not playing at right tackle, if Tyrone Smith is not playing at left tackle, then Greg Williams, the defense coordinator of the Jets, is going to do some pretty good things against these guys. And, oh, by the way, Amari Cooper, the wide receiver, he hurt his quad on the very first play, came out after three plays, never returned. I think he's a little bit of a question mark for this week against the Eagles. You take those things away, and then what Greg Williams did to the offense, maybe we shouldn't have been shocked considering Sam Darnold comes back. But, no, it is way too early. Look at the division.
Yep. I agree with both of you guys. Overreaction, division, as Ryan said, getting the good players back. You think about the drop-off at tackle when you go from Lyle Collins and Tyrone Smith, and all of a sudden you're playing, you know, backups in those situations. It's not like you're like, oh, yeah, hey, next man up.
Yeah.
There's a significant drop-off, and it shows itself on a fourth and two play when you're trying to, yeah, you know, you're trying to get it. You see how much Dak was hit and pressured. And then you think about the extra point, the failed two-point play,
right,
which is exactly what you're talking about, of Greg Williams designing a pressure that gets Jamal Adams free, you know, right in Dak Prescott's face. So I think help – you know, not knowing when those guys are coming back, when either tackle and Cooper come back.
Right.
But help is on the way when they do come back. And so I think they're still in the mix.
What about this? I am surprised that the Dallas defense has not rose up a little bit.
That was actually where I was going to go as well. I agree with that.
Yeah, right.
I agree with that. Just this week, you know, toward the end of last year, this defense became dominant. I think back to a game against the New Orleans Saints in primetime where Jalen Smith was actually was hitting people and sending messages every time he put his face mask on an offensive player. And so we aren't seeing those type of things from a linebacking core that we thought would be one of the best young cores
in the league, we also thought they'd get more pressure on the quarterback. And when your offense isn't playing well, a defense that we expected to be really good has to step up, and they haven't.
There's another layer to this in particular because it's Dallas, and there's so, you know, we focus so much on the Cowboys and who's coaching and Jerry Jones. It was Jerry's 77th birthday, not the way he wanted to spend his birthday, I assume, getting the loss. And the questions are mounting regarding the future of head coach Jason Garrett. So, again, on Overreaction Monday, I'll say this. Cowboys need to move on from Garrett as their head coach. Tim?
I'm going to say overreaction because I don't think they're going to miss the playoffs, you know? And so if I'm saying they're not going to miss the playoffs, I don't know why you would move on from your coach at this point in the season if you're, you know, have a really good shot to win your division and have a chance. And so, you know, people were saying a similar thing years ago about Tom Coughlin, you know, and the way that team was struggling. And then they make it into the playoffs kind of barely as a wild card, and then they end up winning the Super Bowl. And so I think that if your coach is going to give you a chance to be in the hunt, which they are now, and I think there's a good shot they will be at the end of the year, move on to what? You know, right. I mean, unless all of a sudden you knew that Lincoln Riley was going to agree to take the job, what are you moving on to? So for me, that's an overreaction.
Listen, this is not an overreaction for me, and I want to clarify, I'm not saying move on from Jason Garrett today. No. I believe they should allow Jason Garrett to finish this season, and I believe many of the things that Tim says is the reason why. They do have an opportunity to win the East. They do have an opportunity to get to the playoffs. So I'm not saying you fire him now, but coming into this season, the reason he has 1 year left is because Jerry Jones wanted to see something. He wanted to see some improvement in this team. And this was a team when you go out and you play Jalen Smith or pay him, you pay Lyle Collins, you pay Ezekiel Elliott. What you're saying is this team, as constructed, can win a Super Bowl. And so if you don't get in contention for that, if this is a team that can get past the divisional rounds, I do think it's time to move on from Jason Garrett. I do think he's shown you what type of coach he can be and where his ceiling is as the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. And with that, if your aspirations are the Super Bowl, then Jason Garrett has shown you, at least to this point, that he's not that guy to get the Dallas Cowboys over that hump.
And one thing Jerry Jones, the owner, has made clear, he's owner and general manager.
That's right.
And maybe the coach, too. But one thing he's made clear, he does expect to make a good run at the Super Bowl. So I think that has to happen. And as Ryan pointed out, he's a lame duck coach, as the term goes. He only has this year left on his contract, Jason Garrett, that is. And so I think you have to win in the playoffs and be right on the brink of the Super Bowl or get to the Super Bowl, or we'll probably be looking at another coach.
All right. Well, up next for the Cowboys, first of all, a win will cure a lot of this. We know that. Mm-hmm. And they'll move to 4-3. Up next for the Cowboys, the Philadelphia Eagles, they have their own set of issues. And Doug Peterson, the head coach in Philly, had this to say this morning on Philadelphia radio.
I know the sky's falling outside.
Yes.
You know, it's falling, and I get that. And the fans are reeling just a little bit. But you know, we're going down to Dallas, and our guys are going to be ready to play. And we're going to win that football game. And when we do, we're in first place in the NFC East. We control our own destiny. We're right where we need to be. Has it been perfect or beautiful or all of that? No. But all we got to do is try to be 1-0 this week, beat the Dallas Cowboys. We're in first place. And listen, they're reeling too. I mean, they're struggling too. They've dropped their last three games. So this will be an exciting football game.
Peterson has since added a clarification of sorts, if you will, saying he did not guarantee a win, as some would suggest. I'm not sure it matters. Does it matter if he guaranteed a win or not?
It's already on the bulletin board.
It's on the bulletin board,
but, you know, he didn't guarantee a win. He just sounded like a coach who was answering a question on a radio show. And, oh, by the way, the lessons we learned from many coaches, including former Cowboys coach Jimmy Johnson, who once actually guaranteed a win over the 49ers in the playoffs when they hadn't beaten the 49ers ever and won that game. Coaches talk to their players through the media. And I think that's what Doug Peterson was doing here.
To me, I don't even, you know, I do agree with that more, but I believe this is exactly what he was going to go in and tell his team. This was kind of a dress rehearsal for what the meeting on Monday was going to be, because he's going to tell his team, if we prepare the way that we're supposed to, we can go down here and win this game, and we will win this game if we play Eagles football. And nothing is wrong with that. And I think when being pressured to give a guarantee later on in his press conference, he kind of realized the weight of his words. And he didn't want to be that guy. Listen, I've been in the locker room with a guy who was pressured into guaranteeing a win. Anthony Smith was pressured into guaranteeing a win against the New England Patriots when they were undefeated, and it was bombs over Baghdad. I mean, they were throwing the ball all over the place. Tom was running and getting in his face. So I understand how these things can be taken. And so I think Doug Peterson did a great job of walking it back from a guarantee, but he should never step down, and he didn't, from saying that he believes in his team and he believes that his team can win.
He has to, Tim, right? I mean, if he doesn't, who does?
Will the Cowboys use it?
Of course.
I think the Cowboys are going to use it.
If the Cowboys win that game, okay, if the Cowboys win that game, we're going to hear no less than five players be like, their coach guaranteed to win. That's just
– really
so here's the other question, though. Does it even matter?
I don't think it matters.
But
here's why it doesn't matter. Ezekiel Elliott didn't even know that the Jets were winless.
I agree with you.
So are they even talking about the other team in Dallas?
I agree with you. I never cared about it. I know a lot of teammates that I had never really cared about what somebody would say or any of that stuff. I get it. But some guys do. Some guys are into it. And I think that for that reason, are you suggesting you should just stay away from it? No. What I am saying is Doug Peterson is walking it back a little bit because, as Ryan said, he realized the weight of it. And the fact is, if they don't win, that you're going to have a bunch of Cowboys players referencing.
You know, our sage producer, NFL Live, Jeff Wheatley, just whispered in our ears.
Shout
but you guys are too
week.
Busy talking not to hear him, which was simply
we tried to ignore him.
The Vikings used it last week when the Eagles linebacker Zach Brown called out Kirk Cousins.
Funny
and,
how that
and the
works
Vikings kind of used that.
Yeah.
And
how many touchdowns so here's Cousins the throw? Here's the other piece of that. Even if Zach Brown would have said that Kirk Cousins was the best quarterback in the world, it didn't matter because of the people that play cornerback for the Philadelphia Eagles.
And or safety.
Yes,
where's the safety?
Yes, we could definitely complete passes on them. The other part is this, though. When you get in between those lines, you're not thinking before you snap the ball, oh, my goodness, Doug Peterson guaranteed to win. I really got to block this.
The Texans went into Arrowhead Stadium and took down the Chiefs on Sunday. Deshaun Watson rushed for a pair of touchdowns as the Texans controlled the clock. Houston held Patrick Mahomes to just 41 passing yards in the second half, his fewest ever in a half. Here is Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes.
Obviously, yesterday wasn't good enough. I didn't feel like we took advantage of opportunities, number one, from an offensive standpoint, on the turnovers. We didn't score touchdowns, which we pride ourselves in doing. Created too many negative situations for ourselves with penalties. We've got to take care of that. Our time of possession is way out of whack.
They played similar defense the whole game. We didn't execute at a high enough level. I didn't make the throws at a high enough level as the game went on. I felt like we were doing the same things. We were running plays that we had game planned for, and we just didn't get some of those series rolling the way that we wanted to get going to have success later in the game. And so, I mean, there's just difficult times in the NFL. I mean, teams are good, and we played some great opponents so far this season, and so we'll have to find a way to get this thing rolling again on a short week against a great opponent.
So the Chiefs have now lost two in a row, losing back-to-back home games for the first time since 2015. The offense has barely had the ball, part of the problem. And on Sunday, their time of possession was just 20 minutes and 12 seconds. That's Kansas City's lowest ever in a home game. A big part of that, the Chiefs have struggled to stop the run and then have had trouble, or rarely had the opportunity, I should say, to run the ball themselves. So again, we continue on Overreaction Monday. Mike Tannenbaum joins us. He's always here in and out on Mondays, which is great. We get to start, okay? Because I'm going to start with this. The Chiefs' defense, Mike, will keep them out of the Super Bowl. Is that an overreaction?
No, it's not. And like that graphic alluded to, guys, the last 2 weeks, time of possession, 37 minutes, 39 minutes. The Houston Texans did not punt yesterday. That's hard to do in the preseason, hard to do at the Pop Warner level, high school level, college level. Kansas City has to fix this defense, and I think if Andy Reid was having a sobering conversation with his staff, the best way to fix the Chiefs' defense is to be more balanced on offense. And I know they have Patrick Mahomes, but let's get Shady McCoy going, Damian Williams a little bit more, and the best way to help that defense is to keep them off the field.
I totally agree with Mike, everything there. I mean, the reality is this is not an overreaction, because no matter how awesome your offense is, You need to be able to get off the field. Mm-hmm. Plain and simple, you need to be able to get off the field and get that great offense another possession. And when you look at some of the things the Chiefs did, you know, just yesterday, I mean, getting the ball back with 30 seconds left on your own 20, up one, it's okay to run the football in that situation.
Yes,
it's okay to take a one-point lead mm-hmm. into halftime. Sometimes those boring decisions, of which that one would be, and you may even get some boos in the stands, they help you win football games.
Well, they have
games.
Boos in the stands. Yeah.
They do have that. But they help you win football games, and I think they really help you win football games when you're playing good teams mm-hmm. that are willing to travel and run the football like you'll see in the postseason.
I'm going to say this. Mike mentioned Pop Warner. I was the Pop Warner punter on my team. We never punted because everything was a fake. No matter when I caught it, fourth and whatever, I was running it.
I love it.
But, you know, these guys mentioned it's not an overreaction. And for everything that you guys have said, when you look at some of the defenses that the Chiefs are ranked above, it's like the Cardinals, the Giants, the Bengals, and the Dolphins. We're not expecting any of those teams to get to the playoffs. We're not expecting those teams to be Super Bowl contenders, as you can expect the Kansas City Chiefs if they continue to play ball this way. The most disheartening thing for a defense is when you get into the four-minute drill, and that's when the team is trying to burn the clock, and you know what's coming, and you cannot stop it. And if you watch the Kansas City Chiefs the last 2 weeks with trying to get the ball back for Patrick Mahomes, they had no chance of doing it. And when you see that happen time and time again, you know that something needs to change. I just don't know if they have the pieces to do it.
Now, I'll say it's not an overreaction. You guys have said everything I was going to. You stole my notes.
I looked at it before I started.
Patrick Mahomes had the ball 1 minute out of the last 15 minutes in that fourth quarter. And they probably should have been up 24-9 except for that weird non-call. But the bottom line is that you must stop the run in this league. Everybody knows it. And you got to be able to run the ball some. And Andy Reid is one of the brilliant coaches, certainly of my time covering this league. Mm-hmm. But you know, people will say the one knock on him is getting that running game going. I mean, you know, as little as Mahomes played, he threw three touchdown passes. But to me, until they fix that, especially the defense, I don't think they get it.
You know what else is going to keep the Chiefs out of the Super Bowl?
What's that, Tim?
The Patriots. Ryan's lifted.
Yeah. They're
pretty good.
Listen, they won't be able to fix that. They'll have to handle their own house.
A little known fact. In my 8 years in Pittsburgh, the Patriots did not win a Super Bowl.
Oh, really?
Oh, how about that?
Or did they keep you out of
we
it?
We did. No.
They never kept you out of
nope.
it? Nope. Look at that.
Should we say
little
thank
known
you?
Fact.
Are you sure?
I'm absolutely positive.
I feel like this is one of those things he sure up.
That is something that he would know.
Yeah. I feel like that's one he's got tucked in his pocket right there. All right, listen, we'll do one more from this game because there was a lot of hype going into it for understandable reasons. I'll say this, again, overreaction Monday. Right now, Deshaun Watson is a better MVP candidate than is Patrick Mahomes, Mort.
I'm going to say not an overreaction, and I want to also state that it's exciting for me to see so many good young quarterbacks in this league. So
I totally agree.
I mean, the future of the league is in good hands in terms of the quarterback position with all the guys we're seeing. But I've watched Deshaun Watson play for a long time. It feels like a long time, going back to Clemson, even in a loss to Alabama in a national championship game, which he came back and won one. This guy he prepares like a champion. And he will game plan. Listen, whatever they game plan, he's going to be ready, and he's going to be ready to make all these checks. And I think right now the way they're playing ball, I know they lost to Carolina. I just think Deshaun Watson is a better MVP candidate at this point. I'm not saying a better quarterback.
No, I get it. Like, this is an overreaction for me. And it usually takes a while for a player to get where Patrick Mahomes is. For like the LeBrons of the world and the Michael Jordans of the world, where we start comparing them to themselves. Where it's not necessarily, are you better than this guy? It's how are you compared to something you've done already? And I think we've gotten there with Patrick Mahomes faster than we get there with most people. And when you look at what he's done over the last two games, obviously against Indianapolis, he gets hurt early. He goes 10 for 24 after the first quarter. He doesn't have the ball in the second half against the Houston Texans. It was still three touchdowns. It was still a game where he made some plays that other quarterbacks can't make. And though Deshaun Watson played extremely well the week previous, and obviously he plays well against the Kansas City Chiefs, there was still the Jacksonville Jaguars game where he's almost outdueled by Gardner Minshew. And then you look back at the Carolina Panthers where he's working out after the game with his quarterback coach in the stadium. And so
he's the MVP.
So there's no knock on Deshaun Watson. I believe this becomes our era or the new era of the Brady versus Manning quarterback battle. Wow. But just right now, Patrick Mahomes is still a little higher in that race to me.
Such a great
than
point.
Deshaun Watson.
I'm sorry, Ryan, to me, because he set his own bar so incredibly high so quickly.
Yeah, and so I think it forces us to, like, not appreciate
the fact that
how incredible that he still is. I'll still go back. One, I think Ryan's point about some of the struggles that Deshaun has had. Now, we won't remember him. You know, week 16, we're not going to remember the bad game against Carolina, and then he's, you know, practicing after the game. But he was that bad. Honestly, he was a huge part of the reason they lost the game. I don't think we can say that about any of Patrick Mahomes' performance. That's why, for me, you know, this ends up being an overreaction. But with Mahomes, I think the thing that people should understand about Mahomes is that in this era of pretty good quarterback play from young guys around the league, Mahomes is doing things much like Brett Favre used to do, where there would be other quarterbacks around the league that are like, dang, did you see that? It's one thing for us to sit here in these comfy chairs and be impressed.
Right.
It's another thing when other quarterbacks are doing it and like, man, that is awesome. That's there aren't other guys doing it the way that guy's doing it.
And I agree with RC and Tim, which is, I think it's a little bit of an overreaction, because if you took Patrick Mahomes off of that Kansas City Chiefs team, they are a below average team, a 4 or 5 win team at the most.
And the Texans are what? Without Watson.
Well, I was...
This is also true.
Yeah. They have a better defense. I will say this about Deshaun Watson. You know, the axiom of the talent sets the floor and the character sets the ceiling.
Mm.
You look at his third down percentage, it's up 63% to 77%. Like, he's worked on his weaknesses, and I think his trajectory is so high because his character is so high. So I think Mahomes is still well ahead of Watson, but I think Watson is closing the gap, and that's so encouraging to see. And I think if we were Chicago Bear fans watching this discussion, I'm sick because I took some other guy first when I could either had Watson or Mahomes.
Hey, well, it tells you how good these two dudes are. The number two overall pick is now the other guy.
We love both talents. What I do like about Deshaun, you mentioned this a little bit, is he fixes his mistakes. I mean, that ball is coming out now under 2.5 seconds. He's fixed the mistake that made him play poorly in the one game.
And that's why coaching him is so invigorating. That's why you see Bill O'Brien investing so much in him. When you see players work on their weaknesses, again, character sets the ceiling. That's so important. And that's why Deshaun's play is so encouraging.
All right, we're going to talk about another team. And I will say this about Overreaction Monday. We try to get creative, right? We kind of come up with something. We just went. We're just going to get right to it. The Browns are done. There you go. Is that an overreaction, Mike?
No, I don't think they ever started. I've been consistent from day one. When did they start? They have below average tackles. They have a rookie head coach who a year ago was coaching 4 players in the running back room. They're a work in progress at best. They're a poorly constructed team that has star players at the wide receiver position. Maybe one day they'll be okay, but I said it from day one. There's a lot of flaws to how this team was built.
I like it. He brings the grenade to the water.
That was your best answer of the entire season. I hope we save that and we run it every time we promo the segment. That was definitely a drop the mic moment, no question about it. Listen, I'll say it's an overreaction because I think that while until you are mathematically eliminated, there's always hope in a locker room. And I think when that's the case, you know, there can be something that brings a team together. You know, one thing can switch and can bring things together. I don't feel great about it. I would not pick this team, you know, to end up in the postseason. I haven't seen any, like, redeeming qualities of, like, hey, this is what's going to galvanize this group. And so I think while I'm disagreeing with you, I agree with a lot of what you have said. And so I'll say it's an overreaction, but something has to change.
Yeah.
And I'm not exactly sure what it is for the Browns for it to happen.
It's an overreaction, and I'm kind of with Tim on the fact that when you look at their division is great, so they still have an opportunity that they can fight and claw their way back into that battle. And also, they are talented in some places that you really need to be, and that can spark some things. And they have some personalities that if things get going in the right direction, understand how to carry momentum and play with emotion. But when you watch this team, I agree with Mike and Tim, I don't feel good. I don't watch this team and go, oh my goodness, once this starts clicking, this team will be unbeatable. And so I think what's the hard part about evaluating this season is you have to take away what we know about these players and some of the history of what we've seen them do elsewhere and look at this team as constructed. And watching them play yesterday and watching them play throughout this season, it's been undisciplined, it's been inconsistent, and you can't win games that way.
Nobody can disagree with those descriptive words. It's an overreaction to me because, look, they're going to get back their two corners, Denzel Ward and Greedy Williams, who have been out for a month. Mm-hmm. They're getting those guys back. I think Baker Mayfield sometimes maybe should shut up, but I think he was right yesterday. I think the officials were awful. We can say that about half the games of this league. I thought the officials may have taken that game away from them.
But I don't think
it's a poorly constructed team, by the way. Because they're tied in, David and Njoku. You can't control that right there. Okay, the left tackle, I think, will play better like he did play better last year. They got a little bit of a problem at right tackle. But that running back, Nick Chubb, he's big time. I think Baker Mayfield has too much talent and too much willpower to let this slip. I think they come back, and I think they might win the division and be in the playoffs.
One other factor to assess this team is the discipline index. Yeah. And you look at penalties and turnovers. Going into the games yesterday, they were second in the league in penalties and 10th in turnover differential. And that's an indictment on how lack of discipline they are in all three phases.
You cannot argue that one.
You really can't.
You can't argue that. I will say this. The one thing I do hear that I think is a total myth, everybody's saying the wide receivers are running this team. No, they're not. You don't hear Odell Beckham Jr. or Jarvis Landry or any of those guys complaining about what's going on. That's not a factor.
I stood on that all offseason. I believe I've said that more than once about those two individuals, about the way that they'll carry themselves. But you still need to see some production. And that production comes if you can protect the quarterback, if you can allow routes to develop. And that hasn't been something that we've seen from this team.
The quarterback needs to play better, though. Yeah. Let's also not lose sight of that. If you just look
at accuracy's been off.
If he makes throws, this past weekend against Seattle, they win the game. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I tell you what, I will say this because this is sobering. The complete list of teams, listen to this, that have yet to reach two passing touchdowns in at least one game, the Browns and the Dolphins. So,
whoa. I mean, those quarterbacks are super similar.
What? Though. You don't want to be in that category. Mike Tannenbaum, thank you.
Thanks, buddy.
You're done. Wait, I said this last week and more got all over me. You're done. You're finished here with our show. Is that correct?
Might as well get him one last shot here.
Okay.
No, all good.
Oh, you're all good? Anything?
To be continued.
To be continued. We will see you soon. Our Week 6 Monday night matchup tonight, a big NFC North matchup at Lambeau Field. Matthew Stafford and the 2-1-1 Lions, Aaron Rodgers and the 4-1 Packers. Detroit has won the last four games against Green Bay. Here's Lisa Salters with the team report.
Wendy, Packers running back Aaron Jones told me he cannot wait to get back on the field tonight and hopefully pick up where he left off last Sunday. Jones tied a Packers record with four rushing touchdowns in the win against the Cowboys and piled up 182 total yards. He told me being in a zone like that is a lot of fun. Feels like you can just do no wrong, making people miss, getting positive yardage on every play. Jones is, of course, a third-year player out of the University of Texas, El Paso. So while his talents aren't necessarily a surprise to teams, Jones did tell me that last week was the first time that he really felt like he got to show what an all-around back that he is. That was my most complete game where I showed that I can do everything, Jones said. And with Devontae Adams out again tonight, Wendy, Aaron Rodgers will likely keep calling Jones's number to help pick up the slack.
Lisa, thank you. New on NFL Live from ESPN Fox reporter Jenna Lane, who said she asked Bruce Arians if he was considering a change at the quarterback position during the bye week. He said not at all, but also added that if Jameis Winston has another performance like that, yeah, it will concern the hell out of me. That's understandable. And from the Chicago Bears today was Mitch Trubisky's first day throwing since his injury in week four. If he continues. Close but not quite for the Dolphins in their first win of the season after falling behind 17-3. Ryan Fitzpatrick came off the bench. A pair of touchdown drives resulted. Brian Flores went for two in the win with 6 seconds to go, but no Fitz magic this time. Dolphins and Bengals now the last two winless teams. New on NFL Live from ESPN Dolphins reporter Cameron Wolf. Brian Flores said he feels the Dolphins already have a pretty good evaluation of Josh Rosen based on the amount of time he's been with the team. He says Rosen is the starter Sunday at Buffalo because of continuity, but that conversation will be ongoing throughout the season. So that brings us to the next overreaction on this Monday. Tim, I'll start with you. Benching Josh Rosen was a mistake.
It's not an overreaction. I mean, when a guy is struggling and you don't feel like he's giving you your best chance, then it's okay to make the move. I think it's also the right thing.
So it's an overreaction, you mean?
Yes.
Exactly. but I also think that, you know.
It wasn't an overreaction to make the move, though, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and I think going back to him also ends up being the smart thing for the team.
Yes.
You know, and in terms of evaluating him, let's be honest, it's going to be hard to evaluate him, just like it was hard to evaluate him a year ago with the situation in Miami. So it just is, in some ways, I just feel bad because I know how important everybody around you is to playing the quarterback position.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There are maybe three guys in the league that could go to a bad team and just make them significantly better.
Mm-hmm.
And so those guys are rare. I think guys like Josh Rosen and many other quarterbacks, they need good players around them. They need good coaching around them. They need things to go their way to have success. And he's had a rough go at it so far.
Really?
0-2.
Yeah, I believe it's an overreaction to say that benching him wasn't the right move. But I also believe that he should be the starter going forward. And when you put Ryan Fitzpatrick in the game the way you did in that one, you do it because of the way he plays, because of the type of energy that he'll bring, and because, you know, he'll be loose with the football, and he won't be scared, and he'll do his best to get you in the end zone. And if he doesn't, you go, oh, it's Fitzmagic. We don't really care anyway. And I think that was the point.
Is that what you said?
Yeah, like that was the point you were in that game. You're playing another team that hasn't won a football game. You're just trying to find some glimmer of hope, some type of burst of energy, and Ryan Fitzpatrick gave them that.
I wish good things on Josh Rosen, even when he ends up with the next team. You know, and hopefully he wants to stick it out and he'll get an opportunity. But I thought this was so encouraging that Brian Flores, the coach of the Dolphins, was trying to win a football game.
Yeah,
and we
have
all said they are tanking. And they are tanking. But in this game, it just shows you coaches want to win. And Fitzpatrick gave him the best chance to win. So at that point, and he tried to go for the two-point conversion. But bottom line is that Rosen is a starter. He's doing the right thing, moving. Going to Buffalo and playing that defense isn't doing Rosen any favors, but it wouldn't be doing Fitzpatrick any favors, although Fitzpatrick is very familiar with that Buffalo crowd.
Yeah, I would just say, and you're right about the tanking, in terms of what they're doing with their roster, they're tanking. I know Brian Flores was teammates with him, and he's not going to coach that team as if they're not trying to win, even if the team that the players that he's given to try to win with,
right?
You know, that he's, you know, kind of fighting with one hand behind his back. And so I think two things can happen in terms of tanking. I think the front office can be tanking to set yourself up for a pick. But everybody that is practicing on a day-to-day, meaning the players and the coaches, they are trying to win. It doesn't mean as a team, as an organization, you're not trying to tank, but and not have other people trying to win. I think there's a distinction there that is significant.
Yeah, it felt good to me to see that, okay, we need to change. We're going to put this Patrick in here, and we're going to go for two and try to win a game.
It just seems like it's not even in their DNA, if you're Brian Flores. If you're those players. I mean, I don't even think you're wired like that.
You're not.
On a daily,
and the players aren't.
Basis. No. Otherwise, why bother? I mean, I understand the front office perspective, but anyway, all right, listen, we talked a little bit about it when we touched on the Browns earlier, but we'll do this on Overreaction Monday. This could open up a can of worms. Again, we got right to it. I'm tired of all the penalties.
Listen, I'm tired of the penalties. I'm also tired of all the reviews and the way that this is making each and every game become more about the replays we watch and the decisions that will come off of the penalties than the actual play on the field. And when you watch what happened to the New York Jets versus the Dallas Cowboys, where that drive was mired with penalty after penalty after penalty, which put the ball in place for the Dallas Cowboys to score. That's something we don't want to see from our game. We don't want to see the referees have such a profound effect on who wins and loses, and we've seen that a ton this year.
Not an overreaction for me, and I agree with you on the review thing, and I think what it's done is it's made some uncertainty for the coaches in terms of what they want to review.
Mm-hmm.
And Mort has reported this and been on it from the time that they started to kind of change the catch rule and how that you know, was interpreted to now all of a sudden what they have done.
Passer.
Yeah, yeah. And now what they have done with you know, pass interference now. Because what you have, what's happened is now you have guys challenging pass interference, thinking, okay, well, this is what they told us. This is how they're going to do it. And they've just, you know, probably by mandate, changed how they're going to review those things. And so now you're senselessly challenging things. So, yeah, it has affected, I think, the quality of watching the game.
Yeah, it's not an overreaction. That's clear. Everybody knows. It's not just all the penalties. Then there's some of the non-penalties. And the other thing, though, this started back in March when they changed the pass interference. And it wasn't the competition committee. The competition committee was not going to overreact to the Saints-Rams play, which certainly had to be corrected. But eventually, it was Sean Payton who got some coaches, who got to Commissioner Goodell. And I think what they've done is they basically have handcuffed the officials, or at least gotten into their heads, because they're sitting there saying, I'm not going to call this, or I'm going to call it, and replay will either correct me or not. And guess what? Al Riveron in the replay booth in New York is not getting it done, or either this. He's trying to send a message to everybody, which is,
just don't do it.
Tough luck.
And
it's got to change.
And what you said was proved in the Dallas-Green Bay game when the official looks at Jason Garrett and said, if you don't like it, then challenge it.
Yeah, yes. Throw the flag. Yeah.
It was the coaches, by the way, who kind of forced this on him. But to me, this is the league that they're trying to get younger and more athletic on the field, but they lose some experience. You can't get athletic enough to cover the athletes. No. In this game.
They'd be playing.
Yeah, I was going to say, otherwise they'd be between the lines and not on the sidelines.
This is a crisis. I honestly believe this is a crisis in the league.
There have been 18 penalties, over 18 penalties, by the way, called per game. That's the most in 15 seasons. It's just a lot, and it slows things down. Jaguar star cornerback Jalen Ramsey inactive again on Sunday with a back injury. That makes three games in a row Ramsey has missed with the injury. He did participate only in individual drills this week. This was after doctors found nothing debilitating with his back injury, but it continues to be an issue. Chris Morton here now from the Domino's pregame HQ. Look, we know what this is. It's a standoff, if you will, between the Jags and Ramsey. Let's go through a couple players who could potentially be on the trading block, if you will, before that October 29th trade deadline.
Yeah, the deadline that Tuesday after week 8. And listen, Jalen Ramsey, the owner, Shad Khan, expected him to play after a heart-to-heart meeting last week, and he did not play. But Shad Khan finally, I think, cracked open the door saying, hey, we got to do what's best for the team and the individual. I say stay alert on this, and certainly the Philadelphia Eagles are calling the Jaguars every week to check on this one. And then you go to the Jets, and Adam Schefter reported this yesterday, that Leonard Williams is available. Multiple teams calling. They would like to get a third round and possibly a fifth round pick. Why? Former first round pick wants too much money. He's in the last year of his contract, and they are deep at that certain position. And then the Cardinals welcome back Patrick Peterson, the all-pro cornerback from the PED suspension. They're starting to play better ball, and Steve Keim, the general manager, has made it clear to teams, you can call if you want, but the answer remains no.
All right, let's talk about job security for a couple of head coaches. Jason Garrett comes to mind for sure, but also Dan Quinn. The Falcons have really struggled this season.
Yeah, we went over Jason Garrett earlier, and right, he's not on the firing block, and Jerry Jones is not going to fire him before the end of the season. Dan Quinn, Arthur Blank, the owner of the Falcons, he kind of is taking the same approach as Jerry Jones is with Jason Garrett. Not happy with what I'm seeing from Dan Quinn. Dan also took over the defensive coordinator duties for the team, which is the weakness right now of that Falcons team they expected so much of. If Dan Quinn is in trouble, I would wait until December, just in case they decide to have a coach search later on. He's done that before with Dan Reeves way in the past, Arthur Blank that is. But right now, there's nothing to talk about with Dan Quinn, except people in the city are talking about as the Rams come to Atlanta.
Yeah, it doesn't get any easier. All right, let's look at a couple of injured stars who we are eyeballing a return for. Let's see, Todd Gurley among them?
Well, Todd Gurley has that quad injury, which is kind of connected to that degenerative knee. And they think he has a chance to play against the Falcons. So we'll wait and see on that one. Whereas A.J. Green of the Bengals has been out this whole time. He was running well last week in practice. He didn't play yesterday. They say he's wait and see this week, but he's going to practice, so he's getting closer. If it's not this week, it will be the week after. And he is not, he's another guy who they have no plans to trade. And then CJ Mosley with the Jets, he is due back They hope this week, and that'll make that defense so much better if they can get him back, certainly. And, oh, by the way, Ben Watson did re-sign with the Patriots today, and that's big news for Tom Brady and some of the other people.
And big news for Ben Watson, one of my favorite people, just an outstanding person in addition to a good player.
Yes, he is.
All right, each week NFL Team Smart, thank you, will select a high school football coach of the week, and ESPN will honor the Monday Night Football team's home coach. And this week the distinction goes to Rodney Wadig from Milton High School in Wisconsin. The Don Shula High School Coach of the Year Award will be announced at the Pro Bowl. That's coming up in January. And a quarterback change with the offense scoreless and a single-digit quarterback rating. Mike Vrabel made the decision, and Marcus Mariota was benched on Sunday in favor of Ryan Tannehill. Vrabel says he will gather all the information and have further discussions before he makes a decision on who will start Week 7 against the Chargers. So, we haven't done this in a while, and I like it. Time for Overreaction Monday Rapid Fire style, okay? Here we go. Guess is where we're going to start. We're going to start with Marcus Mariota, and I'll say this. He started his last game for the Tennessee Titans.
Overreaction. But I think that Ryan Tannehill starts this week. Mike Vrabel, the coach, is going to make a decision tonight. Then he'll tell the quarterbacks, and then he'll tell the team. But here's why. There were 7 sacks yesterday that the Titans allowed. Tannehill took 4 of them. Will he be healthy enough to start the rest of the games? The answer is I don't think so.
Okay. Again, I said rapid fire, so I'll keep going. Mm-hmm. The Bruce Arians, Jameis Winston experiment, Tim, if you will, is a failure.
I'm going to say overreaction. Plenty of football left, and I think that, you know, as Bruce Arians took over, he needed to figure out who his quarterback was, and I think help the organization figure out who their quarterback would be going forward. And so, listen, even if it doesn't work out that he is, I think they needed to find out, and I think pairing him with Bruce Arians was the right thing. So that's why it's not a failure.
We could agree, though, it hasn't gone well.
No, listen,
no, it has not.
This hasn't gone well, but you've seen flashes of Jameis Winston playing good ball. I think the one thing we've seen is they've now started to push the ball down the field, but obviously the turnovers are still a concern. They want to play this thing out a little farther because they're still trying to figure out if Jameis Winston is worthy of a new contract.
I think he'll be back there next year. Not with a big, big contract, but I think he'll be back there.
All right. We'll see. It hasn't. It's been tough. Yeah, yesterday was tough. All right, Ryan, you get one. How about this? Come on. It's not over just yet, is it? Minshew Mania? Is Minshew Mania over?
This is an overreaction, and this would be for people who are looking for reasons to doubt this kid. Mm-hmm. He's played extremely well since he's been the starting quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars. He's won games. And if you're going to take the New Orleans Saints as your barometer of whether or not quarterbacks can play, that means that Jameis Winston should be gone. That means that we should see Dak Prescott out as the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, because this team has flat out balled since they lost Drew Brees as the quarterback, and defensively, they've been really good.
I do think Nick Foles gets that job back when he is healthy, though.
Yeah, I think that makes sense for a lot of reasons. But Minshew Mania lives again, I think, before it's all said and done.
It does live again. That was a rough matchup.
All right, it was. All right. Talk about Minshew Mania. I don't know. We need a name for Kyle Allen and whatever's going on in Carolina. But more, here's one for you.
Christian McCaffrey?
Well, come on. That's true. All right, Kyle Allen, now the franchise quarterback for the Panthers. Mort.
No, he may be their starting quarterback the rest of the year if he keeps this up. But franchise quarterback means Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Carson Wentz, and those guys. But I do think he's got something to him that they like. And even when Cam Newton...
Ryan's point, he does
Cam Newton, Cam Newton may not get healthy.
There was a name that Mort failed to mention when mentioning franchise quarterbacks. The one that is the franchise quarterback of this team, and that's Cam Newton. And I do believe that Kyle Allen is playing in a way where if this thing continues to roll, you have to continue to go with Kyle Allen. But to say that he's the franchise quarterback and you're making a commitment to the future to him, I think it's a little early for that.
Well, they'll take in the short term, they will certainly take the wins, and that's exactly what he's racking up. All right, Lamar Jackson will break Michael Vick's quarterback rushing record temp.
Not an overreaction. Mm-mm. I think that he will. And I think in part, you know, you think back to Vic, they would have some design runs for him. But so much of what Michael Vick did was really on design passing plays where he would take off and it basically turned into a punt return and no one could catch him. With Lamar Jackson, they have changed their offense. Their offense is an offense that is featuring him as a runner. They showed us last year, and they're showing us this year, they're not afraid to have him get hit 20-something times in a game.
Do I get to ask a question?
And with that being the case,
why not?
Do you think that that's sustainable for him? And does this team win? And are they better when Lamar Jackson is part of the rushing game?
Oh, they're definitely better when he's part of the rushing game. I think it's just there are times because they're creative with their run game, like they'll have an extra blocker that doesn't have anyone to block. Like you're always looking for a math advantage, you know, in the run game. Like on both sides of the ball, you're looking for a math advantage. Like, hey, this guy's in the hole unblocked. He should make the play. And so they're so I think that. Is it sustainable for a season? I think it might be for a 10-year career. I don't know.
Their defense isn't what it was a year ago. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing is Garrick McGee, who was his offensive coordinator at Louisville, told me this. He said, he's one of those guys who does not take big hits. He goes out of, if he has 200 runs, he goes, he'll only take a big hit on three or four of them. So I think it is sustainable.
1,039 yards, by the way, was the record set back in 06.
By the way, you know what?
What?
John Fox on NFL Primetime said, you know, they might get the record for, like, team rushing yardage ever in the history of the NFL. Yeah. Which,
well, if you have a quarterback that rushes for over 1,000, it puts you in that type of situation.
Mm-hmm. All right. This one's for you. Tailor-made for you, my friend. I'll say this. He got one win, so that's good. Sam Darnold can rally the Jets to make the playoffs.
This is an overreaction because I think that this team is a long way away from being in playoff contention. But he gives them an opportunity to compete. When you looked at Luke Falk and what this team looked like while he was
former
the quarterback,
Jet, Luke Falk.
It did not. He is former Jet Luke Falk. This offense looked, and then you see them against the Dallas Cowboys being able to actually throw the forward pass. And so when you can do that, when you can add that to your game, when you didn't do it for 4 weeks, it's at least a good sign.
It's just a big hole to dig yourself out.
It may not happen this year, but I am excited about the AFC East with the Jets and the Buffalo Bills at least being able to compete with the New England Patriots.
Well, listen, Tom Brady at some point has to age out.
Does he?
I don't know. At some point. Are we giving the Bills credit for development and moving in the right direction?
They definitely are going.
Well, I agree that they are, but are we talking about it enough?
I think part of the reason we're not, and I think we all kind of fall guilty of this a little bit, is when you're playing really good defense and you're running the football and you're just relying on your quarterback to make some athletic plays, we don't kind of lift those teams up the way we do a team like the Chiefs or a team like we used to do with the Green Bay Packers. We don't, you know, and Ryan probably speaks to it better as a defensive guy, but so when we talk about teams, we don't talk about them enough because that isn't the fun stuff to watch necessarily, but it is the right recipe to win games.
I think the other thing that happens to us is we fall into this place of thinking you need a really good quarterback to win the whole thing. And when you're looking at a Josh Allen or you're looking at some of these teams who do play good defense and they can run the ball, you always think to yourself, well, one day that's not going to work and you're going to need a quarterback to help you out. And so I believe we kind of sleep on these teams. When you look at the San Francisco 49ers and the Buffalo Bills and where they are in this season, defense and running the football is taking these teams.
But don't you think you still need one to win one?
I will still say Josh Allen has the highest ceiling of those quarterbacks that came out last year, and then Lamar Jackson and Sam Darnold.
Well, listen, like Michael Jordan said, man,
the
ceiling is the roof.
Okay. You know what? On that note, we'll move on.
Michael Jordan said it. Yeah, it has to make sense. Michael Jordan said it.
That's right, it must. All right, Freddie Kitchens got the memo about the officiating, so we'll leave it at that. More before we pick it, anything we should know about tonight's game, the final game of Week 6?
There are other coaches, GMs in this league, who think the Lions are for real and that they will give the Packers all they can handle. And, by the way, not just Kerryon Johnson, but J.D. McKissic that they got from Seattle. He's incorporated in the offense, passing and running.
Ryan was going to talk about Kerryon Johnson earlier, but I sort of...
That's okay.
I'm still going with the Packers.
Okay. I'm going with the Packers, and I'm going 27-17
because you always do.
Yeah, pretty much.
Want, that's your score every week, right?
Pretty much. And because it has to hit at some point.
It has already, I thought. No?
Can't remember.
Okay.
I don't think it has because I haven't felt really good on a Tuesday morning yet. Yes.
There could be multiple reasons.
Well, Mort made some really good points, but I am also picking the Packers. 27-17 was taken. I'm going 27-7.
I actually think
Green Bay is going to get after them.
Well, they
at home right. in their own building.
Defense.
I gotta tell you, I have a bad feeling about this one, especially because I'm agreeing with you two, but I just, with Green Bay at home, and the way that defense has been playing, and we're gonna make it a clean sweep. I can't remember my score.
Well, Lions win then.
Apparently it was 24-21, which means congratulations, Detroit. because we pretty much guaranteed a win. Yes, but we'll see. SportsCenter, by the way, which will feature, I think, all these guys with Hannah Storm and Keith Olbermann coming up. We will see you back here tomorrow for a recap of the Week 6 finale.